Good afternoon, and thank you all for holding. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen-only until we open up for questions and answers. Please be advised today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Glenn Nowak. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you, and thank you all for joining us this afternoon. I'm Glenn Nowak. I'm Director of Media Relations here at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And this afternoon, we're here to have a media update on human swine influenza cases that we have documented in the United States and CDC's efforts with respect to those cases. We have two people available to speak this afternoon. With me is Dr. Anne Schuchat. She is Director of CDC's National Center for Influenza and Respiratory Diseases. Her last name is spelled S-C-H-U-C-H-A-T. And joining us also is Dr. Nancy Cox. Dr. Cox is Director of CDC's Influenza Division. The way we'll do this afternoon is Dr. Schuchat will provide some opening remarks, and then we will open up the phone lines for questions. And so I will turn it over to Dr. Anne Schuchat.
Oh, great. I'm just going to correct my title for those of you who are taking notes. I'm the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. Sometimes it feels like the National Center for Influenza, but it's actually immunization. You know, I appreciate the chance to update you today about a situation we're exploring related to swine influenza in people. On Tuesday, we reported the detection of two children with swine influenza in California, and today we want to update you about some new developments, new findings, and actions that we're taking in close collaboration with the California Health Department, Texas Health Department, and public health throughout the country. Tuesday we reported that we had confirmed two cases of influenza that were swine flu in children in California, and we intensified surveillance to look for additional cases. Not surprisingly, we have now confirmed several additional cases of humans with swine influenza. The total right now is 7 confirmed swine influenza cases. There are a total of 5 human swine influenza cases in the state of California. 3 of these were confirmed here at CDC yesterday in our laboratory. We have 2 confirmed cases in the state of Texas near San Antonio. These cases were confirmed at CDC very early this morning. Both of those were in 16-year-old boys. All 7 cases were detected through surveillance for seasonal influenza, with tests that were sent then on to the laboratories where untypeable influenza was detected. The specimens then get forwarded here to CDC, where we found them to be of swine origin. The good news is that all 7 of these patients have recovered. One of them required hospitalization but has been discharged. And so far, this is not looking like very, very severe influenza. 7 patients all recovered. The cases range in age from 9 to 54, and there are 3 girls and 4 males in the group. And so far, the illnesses have presented with flu-like illnesses, respiratory symptoms, and sometimes with nausea and vomiting as well, and diarrhea. But at this point, we really don't know the extent of the spread of this particular strain of human influenza derived from swine. And we're in the process of an intensive investigation with partners. I want to tell you a little bit about what the laboratory has found from exploring this particular strain. CDC has conducted testing on all 7 samples, and we've determined that they are swine influenza A, H1N1. These are human infections with swine influenza viruses. These are viruses that usually infect pigs, but in this case, we're finding the illness in people. Preliminary testing of viruses from the first 2 patients shows that they are very similar. Additional testing is ongoing with the newer isolates. We know so far that the viruses contain genetic pieces from 4 different virus sources. This is unusual. The sources are North American swine influenza viruses, North American avian influenza viruses, human influenza viruses, and swine influenza viruses found in Asia and Europe. That particular genetic combination of swine influenza virus segments has not been recognized before in the U.S. or elsewhere. Of course, we are doing more testing now and looking more aggressively for unusual influenza strains. So we haven't seen this strain before, but we haven't been looking as intensively as we are these days. The viruses are resistant to amantadine and rimantadine antiviral drugs, but they are sensitive or susceptible to oseltamivir and zanamivir, the newer antiviral drugs for flu. And at this time, we don't know exactly how people got the virus. None of the patients have had direct contact with pigs. You can get swine influenza without direct contact, but it's a bit more unusual. And we believe at this point that human-to-human spread is occurring. That's unusual. We don't know yet how widely it's spreading, and we certainly don't know the extent of the problem. We're taking active steps to learn more and to make sure that we're on top of the situation. We're working closely with health officials in California and in Texas, and we're working with the U.S. Department of Agriculture, exploring illness in pigs and other animals. We're also working with international partners to understand what may be occurring in other parts of the world, and we particularly want to give some messages to clinicians today. It's important, as we are in this discovery phase of this investigation, that clinicians have a heightened concern when they're seeing people with respiratory illness who are have had direct contact with pigs or who have exposure to San Diego or Imperial County in Southern California or to the San Antonio area. What we'd like clinicians who are treating people with respiratory illness in those circumstances to do is to get a specimen to test for influenza and to work with their state health laboratories to look for the typing of the influenza. We also are asking state laboratories to help. State laboratories now are fully equipped to look to test for influenza types, and when they find influenza strains that are not typable, we urge them to forward those isolates on here to CDC, where we can check to see whether this particular strain is circulating. As a precautionary step, we're also taking a number of other more forward-looking measures. We are working with this virus to prepare it as a vaccine seed strain should the situation evolve and we actually need to make a vaccine against this particular virus. And we're working with partners across the government to understand the virus as well. So there's quite a lot of work going on. I want to say that we are committed at CDC and with our public health partners to let you know what we find out when we find out it. And today we're providing availability to the press, but what we plan to do is provide regular updates on our website. And so at 3 p.m. each day, we hope to be updating the website at www.cdc.gov to share the additional findings. You know, in this stage of an investigation, when we're really heightening our concern for clinicians, for laboratories, for others, we're likely to find more cases. So that's not going to be surprising. At this point, we really are making extra efforts here at CDC and with public health partners to understand the situation. We don't think this is time for major concern around the country, but we want you to know what we're doing and what we're learning from what we're doing. I think that there are probably a couple questions that everybody has that I'd like to answer before we go to the general question and answer period. You know, when you hear the word swine influenza, you think about swine, and many people wonder, can you get this from eating pork? The answer is no. You can't get swine flu from eating pork or from eating pork products. So that's not something that you need to worry about. It's also important to know that some of the measures that we're taking as part of our investigation, as we contact people who have come down with this illness and talk to their colleagues or their family members or their friends, we may be doing extra efforts to understand the situation that would not be routine, that would not be what we would recommend everywhere. So in the parts of the country where the investigation is intensifying, there may be active efforts to understand the spread of the virus. I also want to say something about regular influenza and regular respiratory illness, because there's a lot of it. It's important when you have respiratory illness with fever that you wash your hands, that you stay home from work or you don't travel, and you try to protect others from spreading that infection. And those are good rules when you're worrying about regular seasonal influenza and also at a time like this. So just importance of good hygiene, hand washing, and keeping your coworkers and your classmates well. CDC is continuing to work actively with the local and state health departments in the affected states and to connect with our clinical counterparts around the country. We really want to make sure that information we have is available, and at this point I'd like to answer questions that anyone may have.
Thank you, and at this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Thank you. Our first question comes from Helen Branswell, Canadian Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you very much for doing this and for taking my question. Could somebody please tell me if there are links between these 7 cases that you found? Do you have suspect cases around these 7 cases? Are there people who have been ill, but like in the first 2, but were not tested in the active stage of disease? And are any of these people actively sick? And another question, is there any discussion underway about whether or not the pandemic alert level needs to be changed at this time?
Thank you so much for those questions. There are 2 cases in Texas that were attended the same school, so there's contact between those two boys. And there's a father-daughter pair in California. We don't right now have direct links between California and Texas. There's active investigation going on to understand what the source of infection may have been in people, as well as to explore further the possibility of animal exposures. So far, we don't have a history of direct contact with pigs in the patients that we've detected. So there are 2 doubles, and then others that are just the geographic linkage of the 2 counties in California. Imperial County and San Diego are neighbors, and the patients there are about 130 miles apart from each other. But this is a very active phase of the investigation, and it's important for us to know that things may change. You also asked about suspect cases, and I can say that when you're in the very active phase of an investigation for something like respiratory illness or fever, it's very common to find people who have suspect symptoms. And so we're very actively looking into those at this point, understanding that information may change. We'll be updating daily the numbers of confirmed cases of swine human influenza, but we won't be trying to keep on top of the suspect cases in a daily report. I think you also asked about the pandemic phases, and what I can say is that we're in regular contact with the World Health Organization, with the Pan American Health Organization, with counterparts in Washington, and we have not changed anything. Do we have another question?
Thank you. Our next question comes from Daniel Danoon, WebMD. Please go ahead.
Thanks for taking my question. I understand that CDC is looking at antibody levels to see if other people have possibly been infected with this rather than active infection. Has the investigation uncovered other infections, and what have you learned from your ring surveillance?
You know, we're in an active phase right now. We are planning to update the investigation details in the MMWR, and I would look for more details there. So far, we are looking at contacts of cases to identify whether there are symptoms and whether among those who are symptomatic there's any evidence of laboratory findings consistent with this particular strain. That can be done through the PCR test to look at the actual virus or antigen, and it's also that we're also looking through serology, but those results aren't available at this point. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Mike Stobe, the Associated Press.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. On Tuesday, you all discussed the 10-year-old boy from San Diego County, and he had gone to Dallas to visit relatives. Now we have 2 cases in San Antonio. Did the boy go to San Antonio? Was there any travel from any of these cases to San Antonio? I'm just wondering, why San Antonio?
That's a great question. We're also wondering why San Antonio. I can say that we've been testing strains from Dallas, and they have not shown to be this strain. So you are right that one of the patients involved did travel from California to Texas, but not to San Antonio. Again, there's an active phase of the investigation, and it's possible that links will come up as we continue to learn more about the individual. But so far, we don't have any direct link between people who have this infection in California and the 2 boys in San Antonio. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Rob Stein, Washington Post. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. You might have addressed this in an earlier question, but when you said earlier that there you have evidence of human-to-human contact spread, is that between those two pairs you just mentioned?
Well, certainly between the father and daughter and the boys in the same school, we are suspicious of human-to-human spread, but we actually think the pattern that we're seeing is likely to be from human-to-human spread, primarily because we haven't been able to identify direct animal exposure. You know, I think we mentioned in the MMWR and on Tuesday in the briefing that we have found swine influenza in people over the past several years. We've been finding more of it recently with our more intensive laboratory surveillance, but the majority of swine flu cases that we've seen in the past many years have the direct animal exposure. We've seen the cases without direct animal exposure, but they tend to be rarer. Because we haven't yet uncovered anyone with direct recent pig exposure, and because we have these family clusters or school clusters, we really think the pattern is much more consistent with human-to-human spread, and that's one of the issues that we're exploring further in the active investigation. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Maggie Fox, Reuters. Please go ahead.
Can you tell us a little bit more about the genetic characterization of this virus, what viruses it resembles? And I also wonder whether you found this just because we're looking more intensely now or whether you think this is a newly occurring virus.
Thank you so much for that question. At this point, we really cannot differentiate the idea that this is something completely new that that we were from something that we've found out about because we have much better surveillance. We've really strengthened our efforts to track influenza during the season. We've strengthened laboratory capacities at the state health departments, and we've initiated reporting that is notifiable for detection of an untypable influenza strain. So the public health system really knows that we want to know about these unusual occurrences. 10 years ago, we were not doing that. So we may be seeing something and actively investigating something that has happened many times before. On the other hand, the reason we strengthened all these surveillance systems was to really be able to detect new problems early. And I think that it's very possible that this is something new that hasn't been happening before. In terms of the genetic characteristics, I would like to have Dr. Nancy Cox address those in more detail from what I've already said.
Thank you very much. The virus that has caused these infections, are actually very interesting. They contain genetic segments, as Dr. Shippett said, from four different virus sources. So we have some gene segments from North American swine influenza viruses, some gene segments from North American avian influenza viruses, one gene segment from a human influenza virus, and two gene segments that are normally found from swine influenza viruses in Asia and in Europe. We actually have complete genome sequencing done for the first two influenza viruses that were isolated from the 10-year-old and the 9-year-old. Those two viruses are very similar but not identical to each other. And now we have partial gene sequences for two additional cases from California. And we found that the gene sequences from the viruses causing infection in those individuals are very, very similar to those in the initial two cases. So we're seeing basically a virus that appears to be spreading from person to person in humans, and the viruses have very similar genetic characteristics to each other. Are there any other questions about the viruses?
Our next question comes from Mary Brophy Marcus, USA Today. Please go ahead.
Hi, I actually have two questions. The first, do we have any idea about the infectious window for this particular swine influenza?
No, it's usually within a few days, but can be as long as 9 days at this point. So we are looking at the a spectrum.
Okay.
Some of the cases that we are reporting occurred quite a while ago, but have now made it through the laboratory system, and some of the cases occurred in the more recent past couple weeks.
And thank you. And my other question is, I don't know if this is really off base, but since there is no indication that there is a link with pigs to human spread currently, and since this is a time of year when a lot of parents take their children to petting zoos and farms, I'm just wondering if there's any need for concern for families, visiting rural areas or agricultural fairs or petting zoos.
Thank you for that question. Petting zoos are very popular, and they also are a place where it's possible to catch infections, not necessarily swine influenza, but other infections. So very good hand washing and other precautions is an important thing for parents to know about when they're visiting such venues. In this investigation, we are asking quite a few questions about agricultural fairs, petting zoos, and the like. And I think that CDC's website does actually have guidance about petting zoos in general, because we've had some other kinds of outbreaks associated with those. We're not telling parents to change their behavior in terms of the petting zoos or agricultural fairs at this point. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Keith Darcy, San Diego Union Tribune. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks. I'm interested in the additional cases, particularly in California, the three new cases. Are they located in either San Diego County or in Imperial County?
Yes, thank you. I neglected to mention that. Two of the cases are in San Diego County, and those are the father-daughter pair, and one of the cases is in Imperial County. So the same two counties where we had the original two reports. Of course, those are places where we're very actively looking, and so specimens that were available from those places were expedited in terms of our testing. We really do want state laboratories to know that if they have untypeable influenza strains, they should send them on here so that we can verify their origin. We've had terrific cooperation with California and with San Diego and Imperial County. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Elizabeth Allen, San Antonio Express News. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. You mentioned that you're working with numerous agencies and organizations on this, and you talked about working with state labs. Are you also working directly with cities, such as the Metropolitan Health District in San Antonio, or are they working with state labs, which are in turn communicating with you?
We work through the states to work with locals, such as cities, and our primary contact would be the Texas State Health Department, who would be actively working with cities and counties. There also are other, hospital connections within the state, but our CDC's direct link would be with the state. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Caleb Hellerman, CNN. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi. Thanks so much for holding this briefing. It's very interesting. I actually had two quick questions. One was if you could elaborate a little bit on the surveillance that initially picked up the initial two cases, because as I understand, it was some sort of pilot program or testing that's not usually done, and sort of wanted to find out more about that. That's my main question.
Thank you. Yes, the first two cases that were detected came from special surveillance activities. One was at a naval research facility where a special diagnostic test was being detected or was being studied, and one was at CDC's collaboration with that's called the Border Infectious Disease Surveillance, or BIDS, where we're really actively working U.S. and Mexico studying or evaluating infectious diseases along the border. In that setting, we have been not just looking for influenza-like illness, but actually actively testing to see whether influenza-like illness is truly from one of the influenza viruses. And it was in those two contexts, with actually more diagnostic testing than would happen in a routine clinic or office, that the first two cases emerged. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Yorana Rico, La Opinion. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi. How can someone that has flu might know if it's infected? What are the differences between this kind of flu and the regular flu?
That's a great question. Thank you for asking that. You know, it's important for people who are ill to take special precautions not to spread their illness and, of course, to seek medical care when they're more severely ill. What is important is that your doctor or nurse know that you have exposures in question here. The syndrome, the presenting symptoms may look just exactly like regular flu. There may be a little bit more diarrhea or vomiting than in regular flu, but the principal symptoms are fever, cough, sore throat, and occasionally now we're seeing diarrhea or vomiting. So the doctors really need to take a special test to look for influenza, and then the laboratories need to do special activities to detect this particular kind. So this isn't something that a person could tell by themselves at home. You would need to get a diagnostic test. At this point, we're not asking people to change their, you know, to go to the doctor when they have a cold or flu. We're basically saying if you're ill and would seek care, please let your doctor know that you have had contact with someone else who is ill, or that you had contact with pigs, or if you're in the San Diego or Imperial County area or the San Antonio area, we're really alerting the clinicians in that area to be thinking about this and to collect the respiratory specimens that are needed to detect it. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Lisa Schneering, SIDRAP News. Please go ahead.
Thanks so much for all the great information today. I have two quick questions. One, does the H1N1 component of this year's flu vaccine protect against this flu? And the other question I had, is there any involvement that you know of illnesses across the borders, Canada or Mexico?
Great. You know, at this point, we don't know yet about cross-protection between this particular H1N1 strain and previous human H1N1 infections or the vaccine itself. There are active studies going on to understand possible cross-protection, such as you mentioned. It's a very important issue that we're looking into. Of course, we think getting the seasonal flu vaccine is a good idea, regardless of concerns about this particular swine infection, but at this point, we really don't know anything about that cross-protection. The second question you asked about was illness along the borders, either with Mexico or Canada, and that's something that we're actively investigating. We're in regular contact with our counterparts in those countries and, of course, interested in that, particularly with the southern part of the U.S. Cases and Mexico. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Meredith Wadman with Nature Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my question. Actually, I have two. The first is, in the 5 new cases you've described to us today, at the website now, is there the level of detail that I see in the MMWR case reports on the first 2 cases? And if not, can you go through the 5? Obviously, you can't with that level of detail, but give us the basics, the date of onset, the severity of the symptoms, the age, the sex, and so on.
Yeah. The level of, there will be an MMWR with more information. Whether it will have as much detail about these 5 additional cases as we had for the first 2, I can't say. The age ranges for the 7 cases are from 9 years of age to 54, and the I guess the other information I don't have. So I think that would be something to look for. You know, the times I can give you are that it was yesterday when the 3 additional cases from California were confirmed as swine influenza with our laboratory testing here at CDC, and it was very early this morning when the 2 cases from Texas were confirmed here in our laboratory. So additional details, you know, case by case, I don't have, and I'm not actually sure they'll be in the MMWR.
And this is Glenn Nowak. We believe that MMWR will probably be posted later today. So look for those details.
And I think it's, you know, as I did say earlier, I think it's important for people to realize that we do expect to find more cases, given the way we're very intensively looking and the nature of the cases that we have found so far. We are fully expecting the next several days at least to find a number of additional cases. And so whether we share all of the details that we did with the first 2 in every update, I'm not sure we'll be able to to focus on that. Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Donald McNeil, The New York Times. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. These cases are all spread out along the Mexican border. Are you, and there has been reports that the Mexican authorities informed the Canadian authorities that they were having a particularly bad flu season this year with a high case fatality rate. Can you tell us more about what you're doing? Are you typing cases from Mexico? Are these cases all among Mexican Americans, or unusual number of them, or anything more about a Mexican connection?
You know, the question about Mexico is interesting and important. We're actively discussing our situation and the Mexico situation with Mexico and with the Pan American Health Organization. At this point, we do not have any confirmations of swine influenza in Mexico. We are working with them in terms of understanding what they are seeing clinically as well as the virus characteristics of what they're seeing. And I think the other question was about Mexican Americans. At this point, those details I don't have, although I think it's important to say that there are some reasons why cases along the border might have come to our attention more readily than elsewhere, partly because we have this border infectious disease surveillance system, which found one of the two original cases, and partly because in San Diego, the naval facility there has been doing special active surveillance for influenza-like illness in the outpatient setting. So that type of intensive site surveillance is not happening everywhere in the country. On the other hand, we are in close contact with Mexico to understand their situation and to share information that we have. And as we learn more, we'll share it. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Amy Burkholder, CBS Evening News.
Yes, hi. Thank you very much. CDC said yesterday that a flight crew was being tested after exposure to somebody with the swine flu. Can you give us any results on those tests? Have any members of the crew tested positive?
You know, I've shared with you all of the positive results that we have right now. The seven cases that we have do not include any flight crew members. We are in an active investigation mode so that each individual case with confirmed swine influenza prompts a contact tracing investigation that is much more aggressive than we would do with a routine seasonal influenza patient. So we're in the process of identifying contacts and trying to understand whether or not they were ill and whether or not there's any evidence of history, laboratory evidence of swine influenza in them. We have no results that I'm aware of suggesting crew members having swine influenza at this point. But as I said, we're in an active phase, and we'll be sharing results as we get them. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Richard Knox, National Public Radio. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Two different kinds of questions. One is, can you tell us anything more about what avian sequence has been found in any of these viruses and what that might imply, and whether you've ever seen before such a disparate mixing from four different strains in virus.
Yeah, let me actually answer that and then offer that we could get you more information in follow up. I think it's the virus what we have is unusual. The reassortment of these four genetic sequences is unusual. The avian lineage, I don't have that information, and if it's available, we can try to get it for you later. But I would say this is unusual, and I'd like to preface that by saying we're looking a lot more intensively, and so we may be finding more unusual things. And we're really trying to have a balance of taking this very seriously, actively investigating, sharing information as we have it, and trying to convey the idea that we really can't differentiate whether this is truly new versus that we have a better situational awareness now. Next question.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Martin Enzerink, Science Magazine. Please go ahead.
Hello, and thank you. You mentioned that you are preparing this strain as a seed for a vaccine. I wonder if you can tell me a little bit more about that, and also if you are taking additional steps for the preparation of a vaccine. For instance, have you been in contact already with vaccine producers and to ask them what it would take to switch to the production of these vaccines, for instance?
I didn't actually catch too much of that, but I think you were asking about us preparing a vaccine strain and whether we could talk a little bit more about that. Is that what your question was? And if that is your question, would you like to, we'll let Dr. Cox give you sort of the very high level description of what's going on, even though you're science. Okay.
Thank you for that question. I'd like to really place our activities to produce a vaccine candidate strain within the context of our normal activities. Whenever we find a virus that is different, that is to say it's antigenically drifted from the seasonal strains that had been circulating previously, or in the case of H5, whenever we see a virus that's different from the candidate vaccine viruses that we've already produced, we go ahead and make a candidate vaccine virus for this new virus. So this is within the context of what we normally do. This is actually standard operating procedure for us. In terms of a timeline, of course, it takes us several weeks to produce a candidate vaccine virus and have it tested and so on. And certainly a candidate vaccine virus can be used in a variety of different ways in the laboratory as a reagent and so on. So it will be very useful to have this, and we consider this to be in our library of candidate vaccine viruses should we need to use it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We have time for two more questions.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Judy Silverman, NBC News.
I'd like to know the timeline when these cases occurred, these 7 cases, and when to when.
Yeah, the details that I have are that the earliest onset was March 28th, and that the more recent ones are, I believe, April 19th. That may not be accurate, and on our website we will have the accurate information. But these are, ranging from that late March timeline to quite a bit more recently. So the last question, if there is one.
Thank you. Our final question comes from Colleen Zachary Chuck, Infectious Disease. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for joining us. I just wanted to double check. Do you guys think that this seems kind of like a late presentation for these flu flus to be presenting? Is that typical for California, or do you think it's probably due to some of the vaccine maybe having cross protective effect? Can you guess on that?
But let me clarify. This is very late for seasonal influenza, the routine kind of influenza strains that we see every year. That's declining. The regular season is in its tail, really. What we're seeing now is different. It's not seasonal influenza. It's what we call swine influenza. It has different characteristics, and we don't really see enough of it in people to have a seasonality. These are quite unusual cases. It's, in fact, a little bit easier that it's occurring now in the end of the influenza season because we don't have so much noise or so much background influenza to look through. But it is... initially we wanted to take very special measures to make sure this really was a different strain, because sometimes towards the end of a season it can be harder to type the strains that are just regular flu. So this is not routine seasonal flu, it's just occurring at the tail end of the seasonal of the season of regular influenza. So thank you for your questions, and look to our website for more information.
Yes, this is Glenn Nowak. One of the things that we hope to do yet today is publish the MMWR dispatch, and that will be made available on CDC's website. We will also be posting tomorrow morning the transcripts from this teleconference. If reporters have additional questions, the CDC press office is available at 404-639-3286. And again, I thank you for your time and participation this afternoon, and look for, as I mentioned, updates on our website, including 3 o'clock every day. Thank you.
Thank you. This does conclude today's conference call. We thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines.